Well, hello there. This is Jim the Keys bartender. I'm where am I talking to you right now? I guess it's a rainy day. A stormy day. There's tornado warnings in the area. God, Andy M, it's a twister. It's a twister. Well, if you're not familiar with Keys Bartender Show, it's a podcast about bartending and life in the Keys. So I guess we're gonna just go with life in the Keys because it's life. And I'm in the Keys. So, as a bartender, I wanted to talk to you about quickly about one thing and one thing only today. And it's about when you're using draft beer. It's important to keep your lines clean. And there's a hookup that you can use inside beer lines. You get a buildup of a yeasty buildup inside the lines, and you really have to manage those to keep it fresh and clean, just like you would with your faucet. And we got buildup of lime. I guess you get lime in there too, but it's mainly just yeast. And to get the lines, what happens is the kegs are always should be cleaned out anyway, and that's by the people that fill them. Hopefully, they will do that stuff, that the kegs aren't filthy on the inside. But what happens when you have the constant flow of beer running through, you get a buildup of yeast inside the lines and other contaminants. And what you could do is there's a, I'm not going to go through the intricacies of the hookup, but there's a coupling that you hook up to your keg, to the lines, right? And there's a coupler you can get, you can buy especially for this purpose. And you can, what you should do is you turn off the pressure that you have that forces the beer through. You know all this stuff, but you can buy this coupler. You don't have to pay someone to come in to do this. And you buy the coupler, and on one end, it has an attachment for a hose. And on the other end, it's a coupler for the lines, your lines that go to your taps. And what you do is, after you have everything unhooked, you reattach the hose to the coupler to your taps. But you want to clean those lines out. You make sure the taps are open, and then you just blow out water through it for about 10 seconds, 15 seconds. You do those once a week. You keep that beer running, flowing smooth through there. You don't get that buildup of yeast, and yeast does horrible things. It can block your lines. It could slow down the free flow of your beer. It can reduce the head. You reduce the taste. And you just do that regularly. You stay on top of it, and you're good. Now, another thing that you get a yeast buildup is in your drains. Unless you're like an, you have an exceptional system and you never have any beer that flows out. Now, we fill up growlers at our place at the Amarada Brewery and Distillery, and every so often you get a little spillage. And sometimes when you get towards the end of a keg, you get a little more foam, or if it's bounced around a little, or if it's not appropriately chilled down, you get a lot of foam. And that's where you get the overfill, the spillage going down the drains. And that's the drains, because you don't have a lot of beer flowing through it, you do definitely get that buildup of yeast. And if you're not careful, if you're not managing to keep the drains open by pouring hot water through it, warm, some people just use warm soapy water. There's a solution called BioDrain that opens them up. You want to, I mean, you really don't want to pour a lot of caustic solutions through your tap lines. For once of all, it's bad for the lines. Second of all, it's bad for the environment. So if you get something, you just pour water and you stay on top of it, and you keep that lines clean, the lines, the drains clean, then you can manage them. You won't have to put Drano in. And Drano is like the worst thing for your line. It's great for breaking up a blockage. It's bad for the environment, because it has to flow in to it, and then it goes to the water treatment center, and you're going to be drinking that water, or bathing in that water, or using it for cooking or something like that. So the less you can put in, the better. And you might say, hey, Jim, it gets in there anyway. Yeah, but you don't have to be the one contributing to it. So that's pretty much all I have to say about that. Manage, keep your beer lines clean and your drain clean, and you'll avoid a lot of difficulty. The other night at my place of work, someone called to attention, said, hey, Jim, then it's going to gross you out. This may gross you out. But someone said, hey, our drains are clogged. We're getting a little buildup here. What are we going to do? And after further investigation, the only place that the drain could be blocked is right in the drain line, because there was nothing. It wasn't where the drain receptacle, where it was going in. It was just the line leading out. And if it's the line leading out, most likely that's a yeast buildup. And the quickest way to get that out is blow that out. You can get a hose and you can blow it, but then you can have a little mess, you know, forcing a lot of water reverse wise through that pipe if you can get to it. Or this is the most unsavory part. You put your hand over it and you make a quick seal at the end of the pipe. So you're not put your mouth on the pipe. Don't put your mouth on the pipe. And only do it if make sure you get, you know, if you ever siphon gas, you know what to do, but you're going to do it reverse. And what I did is I put my mouth over the end of the pipe. I put my fingers to form a quick seal. So I'm just blowing in my fingers and I blew the blockage up, and you get all that yeasty, disgusting buildup going reverse wise out of the top of the drain. And that just totally grossed people out. That it was at work that I did that. But I knew that was a quick way to solve the problem. And, you know, no one else would have done it, but I'm saying, listen, I'm not going to, it's not like I'm putting my mouth on the pipe and getting all that stuff in there. It's not the worst thing in the world you're going to get. I don't think it'd kill you as long as you don't have any drain, drain cleaning fluid in there. You should never swallow this stuff. I don't think there's a lot of probably bacteria and everything in it, but that's what you do. And it's one of our stories that happens in the thing. So you get a reputation. Yeah, I get a reputation that I'll do some crazy stuff, but it's not really that crazy. I'm doing it so that, you know, the drain runs clean. And I probably, for so many people to say, well, I used to dream about kissing Jim. Now I'm never even going to think about that again. Now I think about it, I'm going to vomit. But, you know, sometimes you got to do some seemingly unsavory things in order to get the job done. I know. I guess when I get older, you really don't care about talking about these things. So here I am. It's a rainy day. I mean, if I was working, I'm off today, which is wonderful. I don't really like working during rainy days. I like working during sunny days. You think I'd like being off during the sunny days, but no, I like it when people are happy when they come in. I'm in a tourist destination. A lot of times I'm working outside, so it's beautiful out there. You know, I'm in the shade. But I'm outside, I'm looking at, you got the palm trees there. I'm not on the water, but I drive by it. You see it so often, but I really enjoy it. And when I'm not working, I think about all the things I could be doing right now if I was at work. Right? And one of the things I do is sarcasm. I do so much sarcasm, and I really like to, I would really like to change that, because my sarcasm only serves one person. It serves me. And I am so sarcastic to people that I really don't feel good about it after that. It's almost like an automatic mode I go into, sarcastic mode. Just the other night, I had a young couple come in, and it must have been with their father, and the father was around my age, 60. And he comes in, he starts, I don't know if he had a couple drinks already. He didn't seem like he was intoxicated. And I'm here serving them. We're doing tastings of some of our products. And the gentleman asked me, straight out, the father says, when he says young couple, these people are in their 20s. And the father says, so what do you guys do here? And I go, wow. You know, I go, we make plastic grommets. And the woman started laughing. And I just kept on going and going with the gentleman. And he didn't seem to really, it didn't really seem to bother him. But it's almost second nature. I just would like to let it go because they were very nice people. The children are laughing, the grown children. And the father insists on asking me questions. It's not like, what's your favorite beer? I get that a lot. What's your favorite beer? And I'll say, well, when I was drinking, I loved IPAs. And then I'll just say, oh, I said, I don't drink anymore. You know, I have an allergy or something like that. I don't do it for dietary reasons. And people would go, oh, you don't drink. And they said, and I'll say something like, and if they really inquire, I'll say, well, I didn't stop drinking because I was so good at it. You know, it's like whatever you do, if you stop doing something, it's not because you're really good at it. Like that guy in, there was a TV show called The Wide World of Sports. And in the opening of it, it was on ABC. And The Wide World of Sports was a great show. But one of the great things about The Wide World of Sports is that in the opening of the show, they showed they show people winning things, running through finish lines, catching a touchdown. And they said the thrill of victory. And then they showed the reverse side. They said the agony and defeat. And in the agony of defeat, I think they had some Hungarian ski long jumper. And he's going down the big ice ramp on his skis or snow ramp on his skis. And he doesn't make it halfway down where he falls on his side. And you just see him spinning out, hitting it, you know, just a horrible crash. And for years, for like 20 years, that guy was on the front end of one of the most popular sports programs on American television as the agony defeat. And every show, every comedy show seemed to have a bit, every late night host, every situational comedy, they had some play on this guy. You know, they would introduce the person from it. He'd be on some shows. They'd interview him, I think. So that would be like, that would be similar to me with my drinking. So, you know, you would talk about, you know, some people, you know, drinking is fun. It's convivial, socializing. You get to taste many different beers, wine, spirits. It brings people together. There's a lot of traditions involved in that in many different cultures. It brings into a wide variety of food groups. Say some people distill products with using grain or potatoes or grapes. Or freight, and there's brewing, and there's hops, and all this. And then you could say, but then the reverse side of drinking. And then they can just show little snippets of me drinking, having my hand run over by a car, which I don't remember, or driving down the street. Or walking down the street looking for my car, which is bad in itself. Trying to get my key into an apartment, which obviously isn't mine, isn't even on the right side of the building that I live in, and getting the key stuck there. Me trying to take down the door of his apartment because he stuck his keys in the wrong lock at another apartment. Me falling down a flight of steps, right? It's amazing. It's amazing I made it to the age I am without a severe accident. Falling down a well, I could have been one of those kids that fell down a well. And then you'd have to lower food down to people. I would be a grown man, just what happened? He got drunk and he fell down a well, or sliding down a hill into a stream. And people say, well, he lives in a city. How did he fall into a stream? There was no stream. The stream's miles away. Or me getting lost in a resort town, walking around for hours looking for the place I was staying, just walking in concentric circles, figuring eventually I'm going to walk by the place that I recognize, and I'll find the car parked in front of it that I drove down it. Or me with a friend, having a couple drinks, having a good time, and then a couple hours later, looking around and wondering what state I'm in. Not intoxicated, what state, what physical state of the union I'm in. So, yeah, that's the reason I don't drink anymore. And yeah, when I get those questions and stuff and being sarcastic, who's the smarty there? That's why when I see people that get intoxicated on a regular basis, I don't laugh at them. I don't tell jokes because I can really relate to them. And it's just one of those things. I will do almost, I'll say almost anything to anyone, but I won't make fun of their drinking. I won't make fun of their drinking because I had a problem myself. I'll be back in a moment and I'll probably talk about, no, I won't talk about the same thing. I'll talk about the weather here. Back in a moment. Hello, I'm back. I wanted to talk about this, about skills, what we have, skills, 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 skills. I guess I'm not that skillful at doing a podcast because I have such a problem with technology and doing a sound. And I think finally at this moment, I probably have the sound almost perfectly. And in June, they're going to get rid of this program that I've been using just recently to record the podcast and getting the best quality. But a little anecdote, for years there was a show on one of the called The Wide World of Sports on ABC, and I think I forget the name of the guy who was doing the announcement at the beginning of the show. It was a great show. They used to cover it was on, I think it was Saturday afternoon, Wide World of Sports. And one of the things was they did the thrill of victory and the agony and defeat. And during, I mean, I guess anybody over in their late 40s on up, maybe 50s, remembers the agony and defeat because it was this guy on this long jumper on this ski slope and he's going down the ramp and he falls and he was the best part of that opening, the credits, the opening credits on the Wide World of Sport. The agony of defeat. The guy didn't die. I don't even know. I think he may have had a couple broken bones, but he was the butt of jokes, skits on variety shows, and all this stuff. It was, I think he was a Hungarian guy in the Winter Olympics or one of these winter champ skiing championships, and they showed the agony of defeat. And I bet he was very good at long jumping. He just screwed up that one time. And we all do that. We all, there's a skill that you have, every listener has, and I truly believe this, that we have skills that far surpass the people around them, their peers. And a lot of people aren't nurtured to do that. They just have it. And I have skills. I don't know exactly what it is. I'm comfortable talking to big crowds. I'm quick with a joke, not with a light of the smoke. That's a joke. That's from a Billy Joel song. But I'm maybe good at history. There's some I'm skilled, probably some physical skills. I'm a good instructor. But there's always if you're lucky, you have a skill that you really can separate yourself from the masses. And you do have those skills, and usually it's an indefinable quality, and you never zeroed in on it your whole life. You never realize that you may be good at writing, or you may be good at deciphering instructions, maybe a good learner, where you can digest educational material quickly, or you could be empathetic, or you could be good at directions. I mean, they're all good at communicating. You could be a polyglot. There's people that there that probably are polyglots. And a polyglot is someone, and I may have said this before, someone who knows, I think, three or more languages. But once people know three or more languages, they start realizing that they have an affinity for it, and they learn more languages. You know, learning another language is a very difficult process. I've been trying to do it for a year with French, Spanish, and Polish. I think when I was younger, I tried to learn Russian. And I really didn't have the ear for it. I didn't feel comfortable doing it. I pretty much have learned that I would never become a polyglot. Same thing with my musical ability. I didn't have a natural rhythm. So I didn't feel that I was particularly good at music. But it took me a while as a spin instructor, about 10 years. I started gaining, just through repetition, I started gaining rhythm. I can follow a bass line pretty good. Before, when I would take a guitar lesson, I couldn't really, I don't know what was going through my head, but I really couldn't get rhythm down, or the concept of rhythm. And all these things come to you. I read a study one time that the researcher said it takes you about 10,000 hours to become an expert at something. And I think that has a lot to do with people that obsess on things, the people that obsess on a piano, and they think about the piano and do the piano and play the piano, that they become really good at playing the piano because that's what they think of. And I guess the same thing could happen with languages, knowing the intonations, knowing linguists have a way of teaching, or not linguists, speech pathologists. When someone has a speech impediment, they'll train the people. I know it's funny when I say speech impediment, I start developing a speech impediment, because when I was younger, I had a speech impediment. It's the way I spoke. And they start telling you how to make the sounds you need to form these words, where to put your tongue in your mouth, where you put it against the teeth, how you expel air when you're doing that. I never really thought about it before. I'm trying to do it. I'm thinking about it now when I'm reading a word, that your mouth forms, your tongue's in a certain place, it's on your, you know, where you place it behind your teeth and things like that. That actually has a lot to do with the formations of the word. The words, even though you have a voice box, even though you're using a voice box, the formation of the words is higher up, unless you're using a guttural tone where it develops further back. So a lot of times, I know it sounds like we went to a speech, where I'm sticking on speech pathology, that or speech impediments, that these skills or impediments we have are more imagined than they are real. So if you obsess on something, you can become a stutterer, or you'll be more likely to stutter. Once you don't concentrate on it, you may be less of one. Same thing goes with a sport. If you're convinced you're not skilled at a sport, you will never find a sport. Oh, I'm not athletic. I have no athletic capability. I know a lot of people that can't throw a baseball or throw a football or catch a football, but are great at ping pong or racquetball or swimming or running. There's people that aren't good at running that are great swimmers. There's people that can't run that are great skaters. There's great runners that can't swim. So that's sports analogy. I was never skilled, it seemed like, in any particular sport when I was younger. I was good at not getting tackled. I was good at not getting tackled when I was playing rough touch football. But it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I realized I had a natural affinity the way I picked up skiing. I couldn't water ski, but as soon as I got on skis, I didn't use the snowplow method. That's when you take your skis and you got to point them towards each other so you look like a V with the skis pointing together when you're going downhill, and it naturally slows you down. That's how children learn when they're skiing. They call it snowplowing. When you point your skis together and it slows you and it gives you more control. So when you swerve down the hill, well, as an adult, I didn't want to do that. I had an aversion to doing the snowplow because I'm knock-kneed. And I didn't want to be going down the hill with my skis pointing towards each other. I wanted my skis to be parallel to each other going down the hill, like I saw in the wide world of sports. And within the first day I was there, I was going down intermediate hills. The first day I was on the slope. And I did not go on a bunny hill. I went down an easy intermediate. I fell a couple times. But yeah, that was it. I was pretty good. I was pretty good at skiing. I don't do as much skiing now. Part of it's down here in Florida, so I don't have the spare time to go on skiing. But I enjoyed it. I once attempted to go down a mogul hill. That was fun, going down a mogul field. And I first lost my ski poles and then my gloves and then my skis. And I was going by one of the ski lifts and I heard a little child go, "Look, Mom, that man has been falling down that hill for a while." I could hear him because it's for some reason the way sound carries on a slope, because I was through more of a deserted section. And I think they were they're probably pointing at me. It was very interesting. And one time I went out of one of these starting gates for a slalom course. And as soon as I got out of the slalom gate, I fell. I was never afraid of trying something when I was on a ski slope. So I think that we have to be careful about thinking about what we're good at and what we're not. We shouldn't automatically make assumptions that we're not good at something, or that we have no skills. We just haven't found out that thing that we're good at doing. Maybe we haven't done enough. And maybe your skill is being able to try a lot of different things. Or maybe your skill is not being afraid to try different things. There's all different skills out there. It's just like all these different kinds of intelligence. There's intelligence where people can, or textual intelligence. I think it's textual, where you go and look, you can learn things rote, or you learn things from experience. All these ways we do things, there's bound to be some, you have people that are learning disabled that are very good at empathy and relating to people. So I'd be careful getting too down on yourself sometimes, because there's bound to be something that is you'll find as a talent, and you don't have to walk around thinking you're good for nothing. And there's a lot of places people work where they feel as if they're the, you know, they're the slow child in at work or on a team. If you can't skate that well, maybe you shouldn't be playing hockey. If that makes you feel bad that you're not a good skater, maybe you're a rugby player. Who knows? That's all I have to say today. Thank you for listening and have a great day. Bye.